Chapter 8 The Eyes of Topolino. The halfling went about his tasks with apparent diligence, cleaning the great audience chamber of Lord Dagalt Neverember in the city of Neverwinter. His motions were skillfully practiced, though, and his attention was never on removing the cobwebs from a decorative suit of armor, or killing the large roaches in the corner skittering through the dusty beams of sunlight streaming in from the room's large window. He wore an odd-shaped bandage on his head, sloping down from just above his right temple, over his left eye, to cover his left ear. By that ear, the bandage showed a bloodstain, from a bad fall, he had explained a few days earlier, when he had begun his third week of work for the man, Dagalt, who was both an open lord of Waterdeep and the lord protector of New Neverwinter. Like his cleaning skills, things weren't what they seemed there either. It wasn't a bandage, but a magical beret, giving the illusion of one, blood included. Nor was his feather duster a cleaning implement, but rather a beautiful rapier, and his clothes not rags, but finery, and his shoes not wrapped cloth, but fine, high black boots. His mustache and small beard weren't scraggly, nor his eyes sparkling and strikingly green. In fact, the only thing authentic about the halfling was the dirt he smeared on his face and hands each morning to add to the magical disguise. The bandage on his head bulged over that left ear, concealing a tiny ear trumpet, cleverly built and magically enhanced to amplify sound. He could hear a whisper from across the hall, even with ambient noise, so long as he turned his left ear toward the targeted speaker. The target was usually Lord Dagalt Neverember, of course, whenever the man was in Neverwinter, although his visits were often mundane. Arguments over which parts of the city would be reclaimed from the volcanic rock, or which defenses would be bolstered, or whether this lord or that could lay claim to this house or that. And in those times the halfling would often turn his ear to the other commoners working in the place to garner the more salacious and, he had to admit, fun rumors. Lord Neverember was overseeing the rebuilding of the city, but he clearly hoped to go even beyond that, to make this coastal settlement a worthy sister city to Great Waterdeep, the shining jewel of the Sword Coast, a 10 days' ride to the south along the tradeway. The ambitious man was also obviously trying to strengthen and expand his own position in the greater Sword Coast region, which was something this spy's friends would not much desire, for Lord Neverember was no ally to King Brunner Battlehammer of Gauntlegrim, and even less liked by Jarlaxle, who secretly controlled the city of Luskin farther up the coast. Neverember was dangerous, too, the halfling often prudently reminded himself. The lord wore his pumpkin-colored hair pulled back from his angular face, hanging long behind his shoulders, giving him a severe look that seemed only more intense because of his dark eyes, deep set so that they almost seemed to be peering out from within a separate bunker. Many of the Waterdaven lords, living in luxury, had long been fat and soft, but that could not be said of this one, with his broad shoulders and muscled arms. "You are a lion of a man," was a compliment often paid to Neverember by visiting nobles, and one the Lord Protector of Neverwinter most liked hearing. This one knew how to use a sword or a fist, and the halfling had often enough seen evidence that Neverember's temper was quick and sharp. The Lord Protector sat upon his Neverwinter throne now, chattering with a lady of some noble standing, judging from her fine gown and jewels. As the conversation between them continued, the halfling spy wished he had been allowed into the chamber earlier to catch the lady's name and title. "A wise purchase, Lord Dagalt," the woman said, "to turn such a handsome profit in so short a time, not even a year."
"The place has strategic value and was built by the kind of skilled artisans rarely found in the world today," he answered. "I was fortunate to have the gold on hand when the offer was made, and did not hesitate, other than to bargain down the price, of course."
"Well bargained," the woman said. "And Luvidi is not one to be taken so easily."
They both laughed, and the subject turned to whispers of an amorous affair between a lord and lady of Waterdeep. They engaged in that gossip only briefly, though, for then another visitor was escorted into the audience chamber, a dwarf with tight cornrows of thick yellow hair and long braids hanging down all around his large head. Though he obviously paid great attention to his hair, the same could not be said of his beard, which was unkempt and wild enough that the halfling spy expected more than one bird to fly out with every heavy step the fellow took toward the throne. Behind that dwarf came several others, burly fellows all, pushing and pulling a thick-planked cart, creaking under the weight of chests and bags.
"Ah, Bronkin, good friend,"
Neverember greeted, even as the court sergeant introduced the dwarf with,
"Lord Protector, Commander Bronkin Stoneshaft."
Despite himself, the halfling spy turned to survey the scene and stopped his fake cleaning.
"Stoneshaft?" he whispered.
For it was a name he thought he knew, though one he had not heard in a long time, since he was often in the court of King Brunner, the most renowned and powerful dwarf of the North, if not the whole world. There were few dwarves of any importance in the region this spy did not know, yet he couldn't quite place this one. The halfling's gaze went to the wagon, and he reached up and tweaked the ear trumpet just a bit. He tried hard to keep his expression impassive, then, when he heard a sound very familiar to him, rattling with every turn of the cart's wheels, realized that those chests and sacks were filled with coins, thousands and thousands of coins.
"I put a derned army on your doorstep getting this here, Lord Protector,"
Bronkin Stoneshaft said, bowing before Neverember.
"Ye might be wanting a good place for it."
Neverember stood and motioned to his sergeant, who called immediately for guards. The Lord Protector then shouted back to another man, one the halfling knew to be the court secretary.
"The deed," Neverember called. "Let word go far and wide that Clan Stoneshaft once more claims Thornhold as their home."
"Thornhold,"
the halfling whispered, for he had heard of the coastal fortress set almost halfway between Waterdeep and Neverwinter along the Sword Coast, just south of the Mere of Dead Men. He had even seen it on occasion in his travels along the tradeway, though only from afar, and had never bothered to investigate it more closely, for Thornhold was a name from another time, before the Sundering. Was it now anything more than a ruin? If the coins in the cart were to be believed. The chamber began to fill with soldiers, and while most went to the laden cart, others began hustling all the non-official people out of the room. The cleaners and the cooks, and a group of Neverwinter citizens who had come in hopes of garnering a few words with Lord Neverember. Not wanting any hands touching his disguise, the halfling was quickly out of the room and then the keep proper. From there, he slipped away down the side streets of Neverwinter. He used his magical beret repeatedly, first becoming a dwarf, then a human child, then, finally, when he was far from the court, a normal-looking halfling peasant, wearing ragged clothing and leaning on a cane, his fabulous rapier in disguise. Looking all about, glancing over his shoulder repeatedly to ensure that he was not being followed, he went to his encounter point, a location predetermined and always watched, where he would soon be met by an associate. This day it took almost no time at all, a halfling coming out of the shadows so efficiently that she beat the spy to the low wall, carved from lava stone, that doubled as a bench. She kept the cowl of her traveling cloak up over her head. The two sat down side by side.
"What's the word?"
she asked. The spy nearly fell off the wall when he recognized the voice, and he leaned over and peered under the cowl, staring into the eyes of the woman he loved.
"What are you doing here?"
he whispered in shock to the Lady of Bleeding Vines, the leader of House Topolino, and his own wife, Dinala.
"My spider. Did you think I would let you have all the fun for weeks on end?"
Dinala answered with that grin that made Regis tingle from head to toe. Impish and innocent and yet somehow incredibly sexy and teasing, the smile of Dinala Topolino always brought a great sigh to his lips.
"If this infernal city weren't so full of spies, I would surely kiss you," Regis said. "How I've missed you." "Your disdain for spies is noted, my spy."
Regis laughed, then looked around curiously.
"How long have you been here? How did you even know I would come to this place this day?" "Because I knew you would have something to tell us,"
Dinala answered. Regis looked at her curiously.
"We watched the procession of dwarves along the tradeway, all the way to Neverwinter," Dinala explained. "Quite a force they placed about that small caravan. If they had bypassed Neverwinter, I might have had to work hard to organize a band to raid the thing. Where do they come from?
Denala shrugged.
We noted them only a day before they crossed past Bleeding Vines on the tradeway coming from the north. Luskin? Jarlaxle's contacts knew nothing of them, and nothing moves from, about, or around that city without him knowing it. Somewhere between here and Luskin, I would expect. Port Last? Regis asked.
Denala wore a blank expression.
She was new to the region, after all, and Port Last was a minor trading port built inside a quarry.
Day's ride to the north, Regis explained. It's possible.
Regis shook his head, for it didn't make sense. Drizzt knew of Port Last, certainly, and was considered a hero of the town. There were dwarves there. It was a quarrying village, after all, but nothing this substantial as far as Regis had ever heard. And certainly the minimal business of the place would not have created such wealth as he had seen in Neverember's chamber this day.
They came to purchase Thornhold from Lord Neverember, Regis explained. Thornhold? A fortress farther down the coast. Jarlaxle will know more of the place.
Denala nodded.
We should go to him then. He is expected soon in Gondolgrim to confer with King Brunner and the others regarding the Primordial's harnessed power in rebuilding the host tower of the Arcane. And the magical portals, my love. They are coming active.
Regis hardly heard her, for his thoughts had gone back to Neverember's chamber, back to the noblewoman standing beside the Lord Protector in particular. He had seen her in the court of Neverember several times before, along with some other pale-skinned Waterdaven nobility. At least, the halfling thought them to be from Waterdeep, given their familiarity with Neverember. Only now had the halfling made the connection that one of the higher-rent taverns near the castle had been exceptionally busy of late, and with orders of fine food and wine flowing in from a line of carts each night.
Spider?
Denala asked her distracted lover.
You go to Jarlaxle, Regis replied. Tell him of Thornhold, and tell him that the dwarves were of Clan Stoneshaft, with treasure to purchase the ruins from Neverember, a treasure worthy of a guarding army.
Denala sat up straight at that.
All confirmed, Regis assured her. So take it to Jarlaxle, and just to him. That way we may garner more information before we get Brunner all riled. And you? There's something I want to see here before I return, Regis answered, looking away, down the street toward the tavern he intended to investigate.
He straightened and turned quickly, and so did Denala, when they heard quite a commotion coming their way, and Regis's jaw fell open as the stone shaft contingent came marching into view along the street before them. Line after line the dwarves marched, heavily armed and armored, the ground shaking under the stamp of their thick boots and disciplined lockstep. They crossed right before the nondescript halfling couple and paid them no heed, marching 8 across and 40 ranks deep. At the rear came Bronkin, riding in the same cart that had delivered the coin to Neverember, and pulled by the same dwarf crew who had hauled it into the Lord Protector's chamber.
So many, Regis murmured. Why so many? To guard a dragon-worthy treasure,
Denala said. Both halflings gave a bit of a smile at that, and at the possibilities that might follow.
Go to Jarlaxle with the names, Regis bade her. Thornhold and Clan Stoneshaft,
Denala recited once more.
Aye, and word that the dwarves bought the place from Neverember. I wonder if King Brunner knew it was for sale, Denala said, or had any word that a large clan of dwarves was planning to set up their fortress so near to Gontalgrim.
Regis nodded, agreeing with the direction of her thinking.
I will join you presently, he promised.
He glanced all around then, and finding them clear of prying eyes, leaned in and gave his beloved a long-overdue kiss.
You be careful,
she told him breathlessly.
I only let you come out here because you were bored. I had no desire or intention to put you in harm's way.
Regis snorted at that.
We would never send others to do things we would not, he recited, and Denala could only sigh. That is the credo of House Topolino, is it not? House Topolino is now but one piece of a larger village for which you and I are responsible.
Bleeding Vines would go on without us, Regis replied. I'm not about to hide behind a throne. He laughed and grabbed Denala's ragged peasant smock.
Nor are you. Then I shall go with you, she announced.
But Regis shook his head, his face serious.
You go to Jarlaxle. I can send a courier.
You go, he reiterated.
Make sure that he learns nothing that you don't also learn. I thought we could trust him. That doesn't mean his purse won't get fatter than those of his trusted and trusting associates. What are you on to, my love?
Dinala asked. Regis shook his head and truly wasn't sure. This whole thing just struck him as odd, more than even the surprising events would indicate. He had been in Neverwinter often of late and had noted no postings of some great fortress for sale, and had seen few dwarves at all within the city other than the long-standing citizens, since it was well known that Lord Protector Neverember and King Brunner hated each other.
And as unusual as this morning's transaction had seemed, Regis's gut told him that it was even more so, and he had an idea of where he might learn the deeper details.
Regis glanced around, then rolled over the wall in a backward somersault, landing lightly behind it. There he tapped his beret, and was rid of his disguise in short order, revealing his beautiful cloak and clothing, magnificent rapier at one hip, three-bladed dagger on the other. His blue-flecked beret, tilted fashionably to one side, replaced the bloody bandage. He hopped the wall to land back on the street.
So dashing,
Dinala said, putting her hand across her forehead as if she would swoon.
Tell our agents that they will need to restock the caches, Regis told her.
House Topolino had hidey-holes scattered about Neverwinter City, in which they had placed bottles of wine they had brought from Aglarond. Topolino agents knew where to find those bottles to use as barter or cover, instantly becoming wine traders instead of spies. It helped the wine was quite good and convincing, the grapes brought from the east to seed the vineyards of bleeding vines. Dinala intended to establish a legitimate business out here with the impressive wine, but for now, it served its more clandestine purpose.
You will try to open a trade partnership with Daggled Neverember? Dinala asked skeptically. He knows of our partnership, nay, our kinship with Brunner and Gontelgrimlov. No, not with him.
Regis replied absently, shaking his head. He hesitated with every word, for he was improvising here, formulating as he went, staring down the avenue where the dwarves continued their march, the same boulevard that held the inn housing the visiting Waterdaven nobility.
But there is someone.
He didn't go straight to the tavern. Instead, Regis went to a stable just outside of town, run by a young elven woman named Iberdel Alali, a widow who lived alone in the adjoining house. There wasn't much business for a stable outside the city walls, and so Iberdel's stalls were rarely anywhere near full. But both the grinning ponies and the knee-breakers, halfling patrol bands who had taken up residence in Bleeding Vines, had seen fit to sign a contract with Iberdel that ensured her a decent living and more than a little protection, should she need it. Although Regis always got the feeling that she wouldn't.
Ah, Spider Paraffin,
she greeted Regis when he arrived back on her doorstep.
What trouble have you gotten yourself into now?
Never that, lady,
Regis replied with a bow, sweeping off his fabulous beret.
Back to Bleeding Vines, are you?
Just checking in on Rumblebelly, he said.
And he couldn't help but smile at the name of the pinto pony he had recently been gifted by Dorigardo, who led the grinning ponies. Iberdel returned a sly grin. She knew him too well, he realized, and he thought that a good thing. Truly, Iberdel Alali had become as much a part of the spying network Dinala had created as any halfling from Bleeding Vines.
Back to Neverwinter, then?
She asked.
Business to conclude, It is my duty to serve Lady Dinala.
You could wash her pony and those of her attendants, Iberdel replied. They are frolicking out in the corral with your own, much like Dinala herself prances whenever her spider is about.
Regis was certain that he was blushing fiercely, but he giggled nevertheless. His expression sobered quickly, though.
Did you happen to see the army of dwarves that marched into Neverwinter this day?
I heard them. And smelled them. But they had no beasts to stable.
Iberdel shook her head, her long silver hair flying freely.
Any others renting your stall since I went into Neverwinter?
It is midwinter, she reminded him. Not many on the road, unfortunately. Other than yourself and Tanola's group, I have seen just one paying customer in 2 10-days.
Would you keep me in suspense, pretty lady?
Little in the world gives me greater pleasure, she flirted back at him.
If I beg?
Are you here to brew? She asked slyly. For on more than one occasion, Aberdell had happened upon Regis when he was hard at work with the portable alchemy lab he kept in his magical bag of holding.
Daylight oil?
He countered, referring to a concoction he had made for her several times. Dipping a small object into daylight oil made it glow like a bright lantern for quite some time, depending on the quality of ingredients. Better still, the object wouldn't begin to dim until it was used, and could be covered, and so held in reserve with a simple cloth.
Well, I do not much enjoy bringing torches or lanterns into the barn.
Which is why I stable Rumblebelly here,
Regis said.
Well, that and the beauty of the groom,
she winked at him.
Daylight oil, yes, he agreed.
A grand batch, I promise.
Very well, then. One paying customer, a large man, seemed like a northerner with long golden hair. At first I thought him an Uthgard, but he was no barbarian. Water-daven and quite cultured, with fine clothes, though he tried to hide them under a weather-beaten cloak.
A name?
Yes, I believe he had one of those.
Please, madam, do tell.
Brevinden of House Margaster.
With business in Neverwinter?
I do not believe he ever entered the city. Nay, he went north just a few days ago. Regis nodded, then took Iberdell's delicate hand and gently kissed it.
Might I bother you for some dinner? After I visit with Rumblebelly, I mean.
And after you brew my daylight oil? He nodded.
And wash the stink off,
she added, drawing a wide grin. Unless you wish to eat your meal in the barn, I mean.
I have eaten in worse places, I assure you.
Why do you assume I am surprised? She asked, and twirled away, skipping back into her house. Regis took a few moments to ponder that he always had a smile on his face after meeting with Iberdell. What a valuable and charming addition to the network of House Topolino. He didn't go for his pony then, but straight into the barn, where he pulled from his magical pouch a sack filled with beakers, coils, a cleverly folded table, scales, calibrated spoons, and a large box of herbs and powders. It took him little time to erect his portable alchemy lab, and he began his brewing almost immediately, creating daylight oil on one end of the table and beginning to simmer up a far more complicated and time-consuming purple concoction on the other. Even while those were brewing, the skilled halfling was hard at work on a potion of his own creation, one he called the Gut Chaser, which essentially elevated the punch of any drink to that of the fabled dwarven Gut Buster, but without the foul taste of the latter. Using it in concert with the purple potion, a magical delight that would allow him to scan the thoughts of someone with whom he was chatting, had proven quite the effective combination. All but the purple potion were completed by the time Iberdell came into the barn with his dinner, and surprisingly, with hers. The two shared a meal and a fine conversation, one that veered to the alchemy setup when, halfway through dinner, Regis got up to add a pinkish powder to the purple potion.
"Let me guess," said the elf woman, "a love potion, one that you will use to make me swoon whenever I see you, that you might take advantage."
"Good lady,"
Regis said dramatically.
"Beautiful lady, you must know that I am espoused to Lady Dinala. Alas, but had we met sooner?"
"I mean that you would use my tittering and eye-batting to strike better deals for yourself," Iberdell said with a giggle, one that Regis joined. He went back to sit on the hay bale beside her.
"I would not take advantage of you, my friend," he said seriously.
"I would not let you," she replied with a wink.
"But others?
What might Regis do to those he did not find so charming?"
"Oh, I intend to get some unsuspecting fools to tell me things they should not, of course."
"I would be disappointed in you if you could not." Regis looked at her curiously. "I am part of your gang, yes? Your success is my success, and likely my safety," she said.
The words struck Regis profoundly, creating a newfound respect for this elven woman and reminding him that his actions had consequences that went far beyond his own flesh.
You are a truly valued member, my lady.
He was pleased to see her flush at his words for a change.
It is not a love potion, but rather allows me into the thoughts of another to see the truth behind their words often. I have enough ingredients to make several doses. I'll leave you some.
In case Brevin and Margaster returns.
That, and whenever you find need, Regis told her. And if you ever find need to use it on me, you will find only friendship behind my smile.
Why would I waste so valuable a potion on that which I already know? She asked. The common room of the Driftwood Tavern was busy that night, full of finely dressed nobles of both Neverwinter and Waterdeep, and with a fair contingent of boisterous dwarves as well, led by Bronken Stoneshaft, who stood upon a table and sang of his clan's return to the great fortress of Thornhold. Just outside the door of the collapsed tower that housed the establishment, Regis paused and listened for some hints in that song, but alas, it sounded like every other dwarven ballad, full of dark, cold halls and hard stone, goblins to be vanquished and glittering gems for the taking. When Bronken, joined by others, started a second performance, the dapper halfling pushed through the door. Many eyes turned his way, and why not, with his fine beret and clothing and wearing such weapons? And the place quieted for a few heartbeats, but just a few. Regis heard his name whispered as he walked across the crowded floor toward the bar and heard two quiet voices full of suspicion. Some of the patrons knew very well who he was, and so knew where he was from.
An unexpected guest, said the tavern's owner,
a handsome middle-aged woman with silvery gray hair, worn up to keep it out of the drinks and food, of course.
Is King Brunner sending forth his emissaries to the Lord Protector, then, to settle this foolish squabble?
Well met, Madame Rosine, Regis replied, taking her hand for a kiss. I've no business with Lord Neverember, no.
But ye've come into his city, then, have ye? Asked one man, leaning on the bar, his tone and glare hardly welcoming.
"'I've heard no declarations of enmity between Neverwinter and Bleeding Vines,' said Regis.
"'Then ye've not been speaking to your dwarf friend, Brunner.'
"'King Brunner's business with Lord Neverember is between the two. I represent a separate town, of course, and one that has an interest in bringing fine wine to Neverwinter. From the slump of your shoulders, the gristle on your face, the unkempt hair on your head, and the smell of your breath—' I would think you one who would appreciate such an emissary.
It took the inebriated man a moment to digest all of that, but then his eyes popped open wide and he came forward threateningly.
Oh, sit down, Madame Rosine said to him, holding out her arm to stop his approach, or I'll have you clean your own blood from the floor when the little one's done poking a dozen holes in your fat belly.
Regis paid the drunk no heed at all outwardly, though of course he was ready to stop the man at the point of his fine rapier, if Rosine's arm didn't prove enough. The halfling surveyed the scene before him. It wasn't hard to pick out Margasters among the crowd, for they were all large and pale, and there were more than a few in here. Indeed, Iberdell's description of them as Uthgard seemed rather appropriate. Certainly this Waterdaven noble family could trace its roots, in the not-too-distant past, to some barbarian tribe of the north. It occurred to Regis that he might be able to use the name of Wulfgar, or even the man himself if any infiltration of this family became necessary. He put that in his back pocket for later.
"'You've brought a sample, I'm sure,' Rosine said.
From his normal backpack, not the magical pouch on his belt, Regis pulled forth a bottle of red wine.
"'Complimentary,' he said, handing it over. I only ask that you make sure your more discerning guests get a chance to sample it.
Madame Rosine stared at his backpack.
And how much more have you brought? Enough to make acquaintances, I hope,
Regis replied with a grin.
I've heard that a noble family from Waterdeep is visiting, and that is a market I would truly like to explore.
Oh, and who's telling ye that?
Rosine said, and her reversion to the brogue of her peasant roots warned Regis that she wasn't pleased about that bit of information being public.
No one, Regis said. I see a few flitting about your floor who would fit that background, and you just confirmed it for me, fine lady. Will you introduce me, or should I do so on my own? And do understand that I can discount the wine more generously to a friend of the family.
Madame Rosine gave a helpless little laugh. Come on, little bug, and I will give you a proper introduction. Just a few heartbeats later, Regis was sitting at a table across from two formidable-looking, black-haired, light-eyed women, uncorking a bottle of bright red shorts, a most delightful blend. Alvilda and Inkeri Margaster watched his every move closely. He poured a small amount, sloshed it about for a good inhale, and offered it around. Inkeri motioned for him to be the taster, so he did, and then poured three glasses. He had barely put them on the table when Alvilda, the smaller, older, and prettier of the two, pulled a small vial of powder from a hidden compartment in her belt and poured a bit into the wine.
No, Regis protested. Ah, but you will ruin the bouquet. Tasteless, odorless, and prudent, Inkeri explained as Alvilda handed her the powder and took a sip of the disinfected wine. I've already tasted it right in front of you, Regis reminded them.
But what spells are upon you, halfling? Asked Alvilda. Or what potions have you taken right before, or what tolerance? Regis held up his hand to show that he understood.
Are all Waterdaven nobles as careful as this?
All living ones, Inkeri replied.
Ah, perhaps I should begin making anti-venom instead of wine.
Perhaps. But I wouldn't give up on the wine just yet. It is quite good, Alvilda said.
Are you prepared to discuss a price? I have only recently come to town, said Regis. I had thought to spend the night in revelry and save business for another day.
Yet you came to us with your wares, Inkeri remarked.
Pretty lady, perhaps the wares were the excuse I needed to meet such fine company this evening.
The two looked at each other with amusement, but at least they didn't roll their eyes openly. By the end of the second bottle, the three were talking and laughing. Halfway through the third, Regis was dancing with Alvilda, while a chorus of dwarves bellowed bawdy songs from atop a large table. A pair of elven bards played a lute and a flute, and another of the Margasters, Regis believed, swept a horsehair bow across a nine-stringed fiddle.
"Should I dance with your sister, too?" Regis asked after one passed through the lines of dancers that soon framed the floor.
"My cousin," Alvilda corrected. "And she has already found her company this night." She motioned to the side of the room, where Inkeri was leaning so far over a table to be near to a finely dressed human, a Neverwinter lord, that she seemed as if she might smother the fellow with her uplifted bosom.
"Knowing Inkeri, her dancing will be prone and not in this room," Alvilda said, and laughed.
Regis joined in.
"Alas, and you are stuck dancing with one whose face barely reaches your waist."
"Which could be all the better," Alvilda replied, and Regis blushed, though after his experiences with House Topolino and the noble courts of faraway Delphuntle, he was hardly surprised. Rarely did the nobility of Faerun hold themselves to the so-called moral standards they demanded of the peasants, as if these pleasures were meant to be theirs alone as a reward for their wealth. The halfling paused in his dance and winked at his partner, reaching his hand inside his vest to pull forth a pair of small vials filled with a liquid more brown than gold. Alvilda's expression surprised him for a moment, until he realized that his movement had revealed to her the fabulous hand crossbow holstered under his vest.
"One can never be too careful," he explained to her, covering the weapon once more. "So many will glance and think me an easy target. Sometimes I must dissuade them."
"I prefer dangerous men," she replied, and at that, Regis motioned to the vials, then to their table.
"An added kick, not unlike that of a mule," he explained,
and he brought forth another bottle of wine and filled Alvilda's glass, then appeared to fill his own with the vino, though in truth he pulled a sleight of hand, and replaced his own glass with one containing a similar-looking purplish liquid. Into each he emptied one of his vials, mostly water for his own and a gut-chaser to Alvilda. The woman produced her anti-venom and sprinkled it in, but of course it would have no effect on the potent chaser Regis had added, as it was not poison but merely a blast of alcohol so potent that it could cross a dwarf's eyes. Had Alvilda looked more closely during the toast Regis then offered, she might have noticed a pinkish ovoid floating within his pretend wine. Halfway through the drink, Alvilda's whispers became slurred.
Your sister was in with Neverember this day when Clan Stoneshaft arrived with the payment,
Regis prompted.
Cousin,
Alvilda whispered, but much too loudly, and she added, shh, and slapped her hand over her mouth, laughing.
A fine deal for the Lord Protector, it seemed.
Alvilda tittered, and Regis got the distinct impression that there was much more going on here than a simple sale, and that led him to focus on the potion he had taken, trying to glance into Alvilda's thoughts.
This Thornhold must be a beautiful castle, he said.
An image of the place came to him from Alvilda's mind, and far from a magnificent kingly castle, Thornhold looked like the ruin he vaguely remembered, more properly inhabited by wild birds and vermin than gold-drenched kings. And he saw dwarves there. Stoneshaft dwarves, the same Bronkin he had seen in Neverember's chambers. Was she imagining the future, he wondered? More than that image, though, Regis's magical mind-reading sent to him a flood of Alvilda's disjointed thoughts. A ship full of dwarves sailing north, chests of coins and jewels, platinum and gold being unloaded in the dark of night. The name Luvidi Margaster signed on a deed, right above that of Lord Dackled Neverember.
Sold by Margasters? Regis murmured under his breath. How did that make sense? Why would they sell to Neverember, then watch as the Lord Protector turned a mighty prophet?
To Alvilda, he said.
It looked like a dragon's hoard on that creaking cart. Not gold, surely.
Platinum flashed in drunk Alvilda's thoughts. A long ton of platinum. Shh, was all she said, though. Regis did some quick calculations and tried not to gasp. A long ton. A ton of platinum. Would be more than 100,000 coins, valued at 10 gold pieces each. No wonder Clan Stoneshaft had come south with an army guarding their carts. The only wonder was why a horde of dragons hadn't sniffed out such a treasure and descended upon them. And where had a clan of dwarves Regis had only barely heard of come up with that kind of a haul? Brunner, the most powerful dwarf king in the north, at least the north, he acknowledged, would have to empty the treasuries of both Mithril Hall and Gauntlegrim, and likely call in a favor from Citadel Adbar to approach that fortune. Yet this obscure clan gave it away for ruins with seemingly no concern. And that concerned Regis. The halfling's next thought went to Jarlaxle, for who else could manage such funds? But he dismissed it. The drow would never do such a deal with Neverember without informing Brunner. He looked to Alvilda, who was staring off into nowhere, her expression wistful. And one last image came to him from her drunken thoughts, a hazy vision of tunnels and vaults of gold and jewels, and pieces of platinum piled in chests, and of a secret door in Neverember's throne room that opened to a descending stair. Regis left Alvilda Margaster, passed out in her room some time later, and was quickly out of the Driftwood Tavern, heading back to the streets, where he could don his peasant disguise and report for work in Neverember's palace very early the next day. First, though, he had to secure this information. But how? Donella and her party were likely long gone from the city, and he didn't have any readily available contacts that could move the information quickly to Bleeding Vines. He thought of Iberdell and nodded decisively. He really did trust that one and hoped now, as he started for her stables, that his trust was not misplaced. From his pouch he fished another potion, his most valuable one of all, and one that he had thought to keep for desperate measures only. But this treasure he could not resist. If he had truly known what was down that staircase, though, he might have tried harder.